covered soft soap me with just a pocket full of hope, money for dope, money for rope. I'm sick to death of seeing things from tight-lipped, condescending mama's little chauvinists. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Now, I really like how, first of all, Lennon had a very, like, play on words, almost kind of rhyme system, which almost nursery rhyme like. But I really like how you brought up the bed in for peace thing, because on the surface level, still today, many people see that as kind of like the most absurd, ridiculous, kind of eye-rolling thing. But yet, people are still talking about it now. They were very clearly aware of how they could use present media to get messages out. And just as I said, even if people think we're ridiculous, or even if our ideas seem ridiculous, we know how to get airtime, to get people watching, to get people kind of, you know, involved. At least if they start thinking about, you know, if we just plaster the idea of peace and love everywhere, then that might get imbued. It's the same thing with the song War Is Over and the War Is Over campaign, where they put posters up all over New York, all over major cities, I think all over the world, billboards saying war is over if you want it, which again was a sort of like alteration or kind of like guerrilla use of, you know, modern advertising media to propagate their ideas and their philosophical vision, you know, through systems that otherwise would be antagonistic or antithetical to what they want.
Lennon's awareness of the emerging, you know, I call it mass media specifically, just because, like, it's not the internet yet, it's not like cyber media, it's not virtual media, but it is like anticipating this electronic shift that McLuhan is sort of anticipating, which is what you're calling present media now. I think that shows, like, if we turn to the lyrics for A Day in the Life, the thing that strikes me about these particular, I think it's the last track on Sgt. Pepper's, yeah. And so there's two things that we can say about this in terms of like Lennon's awareness of media. Well, first is that if you look at the lyrics, the first one reads, "I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph." This first verse is about him kind of encountering the news. And each verse starts with encountering something like a piece of media. So verse 3 says, "I saw a film today." Verse 4, "I read the news today again." It's just a continued encounter of Lennon's experience with media at the time. But he always manages to not just subvert it in some way, but his reaction is always based on some seeing past the veil, right? Which, again, makes total sense for someone who is steeped in this emerging sort of integration of Eastern, you know, mysticism with like Western ideas and pursuits of meaning, whatnot, right? Seeing past the Maya and whatnot. He laughs when he sees the photograph, when he sees the film. "I just had to look, having read the book." So he's seeing this like simulacrum emerge of films being coming out of books. In the fourth verse, "I read the news today, oh boy, 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire," that's how he pronounces it, "and though the holes were rather small, they had to count them all. Now they know how many holes it takes to fill the Albert Hall." So again, like relations between particular like spaces and seeing like the absurdity of those relations. But I think the other really interesting thing about this is it has this like really experimental feature at the end of the actual album itself. It ends on a run-in groove. A vinyl record is a piece of vinyl that has been stamped with the actual waveform of the audio. You put a needle in it and the circles are not concentric, but they're a spiral. And eventually the needle is going to come to the finite amount of groove that's possible on the record, right? And the last groove is going to be a circle, and it's just going to loop in. It's kind of like how a train track switches onto another rail, right? And then it's going to spin infinitely around it as the record player doesn't know when a record actually ends, right? So what they had the producers do on this album was they put like a, it's like a tape loop, it's a record loop, and it just loops infinitely. And this is, as far as I'm aware of, like, certain electronic musicians who were doing this in the early 80s. They must have gotten this technique from Sgt. Pepper's, though, because this, I'm seeing this encountered, and I'm bringing this up. Again, we weren't going to talk about it too musically. I'm not going to talk about, like, the phonics of it or anything, but this is just, like, one more push for me to attribute this as, like, a commentary on media, or at least, like, it's almost like a flex in a way of Lennon talking about how he's so good at, like, piercing the veil of media, and then he literally invents, like, a new form of media presentation, the loop. Never could see any other way, which exactly is, like, yeah, everyone else is stuck seeing in this way. Lennon can see past it, and it's infinite. It's like a cyclical loop. It's almost like the concept of, like, samsara, you know, this idea of, like, well, you get stuck in a certain way of seeing, and that the conditions for that just lead to seeing it further and further and further.
Which I think is a nice transition over, honestly, into this idea of seeing, stepping away from the obvious sort of, you know, peace and love aspects of, you know, Lennon's philosophy, which is a kind of more well-known aspect, to more of these ideas around identity, which I think are really clear and something he deals with a lot in his work. You know, in Strawberry Fields, he has, you know, these great lines, you know, living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Lennon clearly has influence from the Eastern tradition, skepticism around reality, you know, the idea of, you know, you can sort of, like, enter this veil of, like, normalcy, the kind of, like, we talked about with you know, with ideas with, like, Heidegger and other existentialists, the sort of, like, normal everyday and the crowd, you know, the herd consuming you, and you can, that can kind of blind you and put you, you know, but if you take the blinders off, he kind of adds this Eastern flair of, like, also not really caring so much at the same time. But I think a really interesting part of Lennon is he doesn't go all the way with the sort of Eastern tradition of this negation of the self. He's always very concerned with who he is and who people can be. There's always this kind of Cartesian almost element of this sort of, like, I am, this central internal person that, you know, Lennon is, and that he obviously recognized, and that's the outgrowth of the sort of, like, love and peace, you know, modality, is that we all have this sort of central self. He clearly doesn't accept the sort of no self variation. His song Nowhere Man, which is an earlier version, he's a real nowhere man sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody, doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. But isn't he a bit like you and me? And there's this sort of negation of, you know, place and person, wants or whatever it might be, all these sort of attributing factors. But he, you know, at the end, isn't he a bit like you and me in this kind of, like, well, but even the nowhere man is somebody, and all of us also have this sort of wandering aspect to ourselves, right? We can all kind of lose a sense of who we are. We can lose a sense of place. We can lose a sense of purpose. It's not inviting people to be this kind of person. It comes across more as a warning about being someone who is completely lost their personal sense of identity.
Yeah, absolutely. And that seems to be a big theme as far as Lennon's sort of holding the Eastern contributions at a distance in a way. I think you're right to point up that he doesn't have this, like, no self view. He's very critical of people who just kind of, like, are imbibing, like, these traditions in, like, to the exclusive pursuit of, like, a self-destructive kind of way, because there has to be some person who is like engaging in these, right? And just, this is like a big trip that happens. You know, the hippies would have called this like an ego trip. This idea that like, yo, you know, I have to abandon my ego or I have to transcend. Well, that's an attachment too, right? That is also like, there's some like unexamined something that wants to be this, right? So there is Lenin's response as like, you know, isn't he a bit like you and me, moderating that this like nowhere man has some kind of content, but that content is relational, right? It's not either the extreme of being the nowhere man who has, you know, who doesn't exist anywhere, it doesn't even have a point of view. He doesn't even, he can't make the world manifest. He doesn't have a point of view. And yet he is like you and me insofar as like he's constituted by his relations, right? But the other thing that I liked about this too is, like, I think you said this, he is like us. And this is the kind of point where we start to understand the nowhere man. There is something that's like illuminating about being this way, because we do kind of like feel this way sometimes. And I think that even Lenin did as well. As much as he was good at being critical of his stances towards just like extreme asceticism or self-obliteration, he does still kind of have this cynical side to him, right?
One of the best songs to jump in with that before we get into the kind of relational component, which I think is really important and it illustrates really well, there's this kind of negation component. And the other song that I think is really important for this is his very poetic and very structurally interesting song called God, which has this very famous opening line, God is a concept by which we measure our pain. And then he actually emphasizes that. He says, I'll say it again, God is a concept by which we measure our pain. So already God has become this kind of nebulous figure or human construct that we use to sort of deal with or cope with the struggles of life. You can kind of envision it, right? Like the person who is living this wonderful life and all these great things are going on and everything's perfect and they feel happy all the time, they probably don't think about God that much. But the guy who's in like a trench, you know, with like bombs going off all around him and things, is probably praying to God, right? So you can kind of see how this structure sort of works. But then he goes on to have basically just a bunch of things he doesn't believe in. So he says, I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in I Ching. So there's throwing off a lot of, you know, Taoism and all that kind of stuff. I don't believe in Bible. I don't believe in tarot cards and stuff like that. I don't believe in Hitler. I don't believe in Jesus. I don't believe in Kennedy. I don't believe in Buddha. I don't believe in mantra. I don't believe in Gita. I don't believe in yoga. I don't believe in kings. I don't believe in Elvis. I don't believe in Zimmerman. I don't believe in the Beatles, which is obviously his own band. I just believe in me, Yoko and me, and that's reality. So there's this really interesting, like you said, or we're kind of saying, this sort of negation. All these, he was very clearly concerned with people seeing, with people having idols, and also with people seeing him as an idol too, right? Like he's very much saying like he's just a guy, and all these sort of, you know, superhero type figures, whether they be Hitler or not saying Hitler's a superhero, but I mean, obviously someone who was like super idolized in their own context, whether it's Hitler, Jesus, Kennedy, Buddha, all of these things become, you know, just idols of worship that kind of take you away from who you really are. He goes on to say, the dream is over. You know, what can I say? The dream is over. Yesterday, I was the dreamer, I was the dream weaver, but now I'm reborn. I was the walrus. That's obviously a note to another song, I'm the Walrus by the Beatles, but now I'm John. And so, dear friends, you'll just have to carry on. The dream is over. So it's sort of like this complete breakdown and fracturing of all this idolization and this sort of like kind of almost ubermensch idealism. And really just saying that the things that matter are your own self and your personal relationships, you know, which obviously translate back into things like love and, you know, appreciation for other people that are close to you and what you actually care for.
The other two things to bring in here, I'm not going to like look over the lyrics specifically, but the song that he's referencing here, and even I Am the Walrus. And the other song that I'm thinking is Revolution One, where he's sort of like swatting away all these people who want to recruit him for these like particular causes, because he's got like money, he's got power, he's got influence. He wants to influence the world too, but he's not going to do it. He doesn't think that you need those things to do it, again, through like pacifism and love. The lyrics from God also show what he thinks you need, and it is, I just believe in me. Yoko and me, and that's reality. Again, I just believe in the particular relations I have. I've like deconstructed, you know, these like phantasms, basically these ghosts that you think are going to have like powers to affect the world. Well, really the effect that you have is right here and right now. And it to the people who matter, right? And I Am the Walrus as well, in a certain way. I know that the story of it is there were English teachers who were trying to like analyze his lyrics, and he did it as kind of, we would say, as a troll. And that's him kind of like putting on the veil in a sort of like ironic way in that sense.
It's reflecting back and trying to kind of say everybody can kind of do this process, right? Everybody can kind of strip away all these sort of idols or these, you know, ideologies or isms or whatever, and kind of find their own path as long as it involves, you know, genuine loving kind of relationships. And I think, you know, to go to another song that really illustrates this, you know, In My Life, which was an earlier song from 1965, it goes, there are places I'll remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places had their moments with lovers and friends I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I've loved them all. So I think, you know, actually, I'll go on and just read the next verse anyway, so it's really great. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you, and these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. So I think this gets back to the other component of Lennon that I think is really important in his kind of ideology, if there even is one, which is very loose, but is that personal relationships are really important. Personal relationships define who you are, right? So the people that you care about, but also the people that you've lost, the people that you remember, the periods of your life, these relationships are the defining features of your identity. And it's up to you to kind of embrace them as like yourself, right? As the most defining feature of who you are.
It's striking how constituted we are by relationships, right? I was thinking how impossible it is really well and truly to be alone, right? If you are with people, sure, you're around people, but say you leave them, well, it's still possible to be in relation to them through their absence. We all know people who have like either died or we don't have like a relationship with them anymore. And yet we still have some kind of relationship with that past, with that memory, and the fact that we're thinking about it and revitalizing it with our thoughts and coming up with new meanings means that it is kind of nourishing the relationships that we have and like constituting our identities and how we exist in the world.
It's another really great song that really brings that up in a kind of reverse effect, right? So like you're talking about, you know, the importance of our personal relationships and memories and stuff like that. His early life was quite tragic and all this kind of stuff. And another song, Mother, from his solo work, you know, he goes on to say, you know, Mother, you had me, but I never had you. I wanted you. You didn't want me. So I just got to tell you goodbye, goodbye. And then he goes on, Father, you left me, but I never left you. I needed you, but you didn't need me, so I just got to tell you goodbye, goodbye. So again, this is quite obviously quite a sad song, and the actual song, if you listen to it, is very, his voice is very, he's very clearly quite emotional while performing the song, but it's an important reflection of how he viewed, how impactful his really negative relationship with his family was as to who he is now, right? And he's, you know, on the one hand, in the song, you know, he's saying goodbye, but he's also so clearly, you know, kind of seared in pain through the loss of, you know, these relationships. And so they're still very clearly defining who he is, even though he's trying to get past them, which I think and that song is very quite famous for being an example of an incredibly raw, emotional, you know, kind of, you know, emotionally open lyrically song.
Yeah, there is, it's kind of like the poster child piece of art for this idea that, like, what artists are trying to do is to, like, excise some kind of thing from them. You know, they've got some problem or baggage or whatever, and if I just make a piece of work that, like, embodies or expresses it, somehow it'll get out there. I can just be done with it, right? Lennon is more than aware of the fact that, not that this is going to be, like, unsuccessful, you know, I think he's beyond the illusion of, like, these reified things that are in you, and you just have to get them out there through his philosophy of relation. There is still something important in doing that, right? Because as much as he wants to say goodbye, well, you're saying goodbye to someone, and then that is a relation of absence you're going to have.
And then we can kind of translate over into, he translates over into relationships or present relationships. So you have this kind of, like, okay, memories, these past relationships or mother loss, but then also at the end of his life, as he started to rebuild a relation or build a new relationship with his second child, he wrote the song Beautiful Boy, which, you know, is a really, you know, quite, you know, wonderful song about the relationship between a father and son, right? And seeing, you know, like, basically illustrating his closeness with his own child. You know, he says, you know, before you cross the street, take my hand. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. Close your eyes, have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run. And your daddy's here. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful boy. You know, so again, a song that's really influencing and just, or not influencing, is really influenced by and displaying the importance of his relationship with his son, which seems such, like, a simple thing, but, you know, like, he's emphasizing it through a piece of artwork that, you know, millions of people are going to listen to. And again, I think that's also about him trying to get his message out there of the importance of having these sorts of relationships, right? Like, don't overlook them, especially when he says, you know, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. The point is that, you know, you think you have all these things, or you think you have time, or you think you can do this or that, but you don't actually know. So the importance of the here and now is appreciating the people that you're with and the things that you're doing, because who knows what's going to happen. And obviously, within his own story, he was, you know, assassinated like 2 months or a month after the song came out.
But I think this does go to sort of, and it makes a lot of sense of previous parts, right? Like, Nowhere Man is quite oblivious to what he's missing out on. And in Strawberry Fields, that comes up as well, you know, misunderstanding what you don't even understand you see. That's a central theme of these practices that he was at this point in his like artistic output, and seemingly in his life as well, where he's constructing these new relations. These have exited philosophical practices, and they've actually come to fruit in his life. He's now actually, he isn't just like throwing off the veil of Maya to see what's really going on. Now he's actually cultivating relationships. Now he's actually sort of reconciling with ones that he can't. And he's expressing that through his music as well. He's putting it on as a kind of like a case study in like virtuous behavior in a certain way, if we can think of this as like a philosophical piece. It's when, you know, it's the point at which the philosopher becomes like a novelist, showing characters who actually embody the virtues that they're sort of trying to espouse and what that looks like. But he's doing it in a way that is honest, right? He's not just writing like fictional characters. He's actually living into these lessons and showing through their reality that they're possible, right? I mean, that's the whole point for Lennon and that milieu is that these things have to be real, right? We can come up with as much, we can imagine things as much as we want, but they have to be real.
To touch on that, as you said, imagine, probably his most one of his most famous songs for sure, one of the most famous songs of all time. Imagine is this really interesting bridging song, exactly what you're talking about, where imagination itself becomes this really interesting tool for creating a better world. So, like, I'm sure many of the listeners know lyrics to Imagine, but like the first goes, imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try, no hell below us, above us only sky, imagine all the people living for today. Then he goes on to say, imagine there's no countries, imagine there's no possessions, imagine there's no greed, no hunger, no war. I think it's a good place to end because you sort of get this almost espousing of imagination, of creativity as not external action, but an internal framework that can be used to inspire external actions. A lot of people were, you know, have been very critical of the song because they're like, oh, well, he was a rich guy saying no possessions, or what do you mean no countries? But at the end of the day, if you really look at the lyrics, I think what he was really trying to do is ask you, the listener, to be somewhat skeptical of what you already know, what you think to be true, what you think must be the case, what you think is a necessity, and imagine that maybe things could be different. And if you can imagine how that might look, then maybe it's possible to make it come true in some sense, even if it's, like, you know, only partial or whatever. Imagining is the first step to, you know, creating effectively.
You said there's a kind of like class of song that Lennon does, which is like the negation song. It's worth noting that Imagine is imagining that there is not something. You're not actually producing the image of anything. Like, we have this idea of like imagination is conjuring images. Really, it's the imagining of things being otherwise. It's one of his negation songs. Imagine there is no religion, no nations, no possessions. So in that regard, he's asking you to imagine a counterfactual and not just like conjure up some alternative fantasy, which all the other, you know, which in Revolution 1 are like trying to like recruit him for.
You've been listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm Hale, and with me as usual is Brandon, and we hope you'll join us next week.
You can find the Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
This is Bird Note. When a northern saw-whet owl spreads its wings, many birds can see something our human eyes can't. The owl's flight feathers glow. It's invisible to humans without the help of an ultraviolet blacklight, which reveals a bright magenta color. Producing this otherworldly light is a trait called photoluminescence. While some bird feathers simply reflect UV light, photoluminescence involves special pigments or structures in the feathers that absorb UV and then release light of their own, often in a different color. Some cases of luminous feathers have an apparent purpose. For example, parakeets called budgerigars have glowing feathers on their crowns and cheeks that may help them stand out to mates. Over 50 species of parrots, as well as some toucans, have similar gleaming ornaments. But for other birds, such as owls, we still don't have a good idea for the reason behind the glow. The luminous owl wings do have a specific use for biologists, though. Scientists realized that they could estimate an owl's age based on the pattern of luminescent color on the wings, which changes predictably as birds grow and replace their feathers. It's a practical application of a beautiful mystery. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. Bird Note is grateful to the many contributions of Dr. Gordon Oriens and for his ongoing support of the show.
Everybody has a stomach ache from time to time, but when you regularly experience abdominal pain, bloating, constipation, and/or diarrhea, you might have IBS. Go to badgut.org
and take the 30-second IBS test to find out. As many as 20% of British Columbians have irritable bowel syndrome. Got a bad gut? Go to badgut.org for good advice.
Speak up.